I'm Doug Nadvornik. Today on the Inland Journal podcast, it's a transition time for a longtime Spokane educational institution. The Spokane Guild School and Neuromuscular Center serves children with developmental disabilities aged birth to three. It's been around since 1960. It was started by a group of women who wanted to provide care for children with special needs. The school serves about 300 kids in an old surplus public school near Shadle Park High School. Perhaps you know the Guild School as the place that does the yearly penny drive. On April 27th, Guild School staff and parents will line streets in 13 locations around the county and urge drivers to stop and hand over their loose change. As part of its transition, the Guild School has changed its name to Joya Child and Family Development, and it's in the middle of a capital campaign to raise money to develop a new home near Gonzaga University. We'll get to those things as we interview the school's executive director, Dick Boyson. We start with a short history of the school and of special education in general.
The founders themselves did not have children with developmental disabilities. They created a program primarily of respite. But even way back then in 1960, they worked with infants and toddlers. And, you know, in 1975, the Education for All Act was passed at the federal level. In our state, House Bill 90 was passed in 1971, which was our state's Education for All Act. And really, Rudd Turnbull, an attorney and a father at the federal level, just adopted had Congress adopt Washington State's law. So when you think of the civil rights movement, the rights for developmentally disabled people were the last rights granted, because up until that time, they did not have a right to a public education like any other child. But at that point, they had a right for a free, appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment. So that was important, because as you get moved through time in the public school system, least restrictive environment becomes a big issue, because we're wanting to integrate children. You know, I was working, you know, in the field at the time the federal law was passed, and, you know, it was gigantic. Of course, school systems in the United States and everybody else, you know, always hold that up as the unfunded mandate, because Congress promised state education agencies that they would fund 40% of the cost. Well, the reality is they've never funded more than 15%. So that's why in our legislature right now, there's all this talk about trying to put together more money to serve kids with special needs.
So help me with the idea of the use of the word guild here. What does that refer to?
Yeah, they were part of an organization at that time called the Washington State Guilds for Retarded Children. And so guilds was a term that I think was used in churches. But, you know, one of the problems is unions use it, firemen groups, police groups. So, yeah, it's an odd name.
So if you go back to the 1960s, what were the services that the Spokane Guild School provided to children and their families?
Yeah, even way back then, we had special ed teachers and therapists, physical, occupational, speech and language pathologists. But that really moved a lot in the 70s. That's when it really boomed. Because at that point, you know, you had the state law in effect in 71, and the federal law in 75. So when I came here, it was a good program. And we just worked on it through time. But yeah, Spokane had something to be proud of. And it's because of the women of the guilds, yeah, that was true. That wasn't true everywhere. But Washington State was ahead of all states, because they had created the Experimental Education Unit at the University of Washington. So this state, early on, had good programs for infants and toddlers, and the deinstitutionalization movement was pretty active in our state, because you have to remember, at one time, Lakeland Village had over 3,000, and they had their own farm and everything, 3,000 people lived out there. And now today it's under 300.
So those of us who don't have special needs children, what are the sorts of things that your children do in the classrooms here with your faculty members?
So with every child, they have an extensive evaluation of their developmental skills, their motor skills, their cognitive skills, their self-help skills, their communication skills. So we're looking at all that. And in every instance, with the development of the individual family service plan, we're trying to approximate normal development. And last year, 48% of the kids that attended the school last year, on or before their third birthday, had developmentally appropriate skills. They were discharged, and we don't think they'll ever show up in the public school systems. So that saves per child hundreds of thousands of dollars. And when you think of the total number of kids, we're talking about millions of dollars. So even if you were a hard-hearted businessman, you know, you would think that's a good investment.
And who pays for the services here? Do the parents pay for them, or is there there's government money?
Well, about, depending on the year, 60 to 65% comes from the government. Okay, the balance we raise privately through our donors, our foundation, bequests to the school.
And the services are free to the families?
Yes, and when they come in, they go through sort of a interview with our billing agent, who talks to the parents about, can they afford to participate in a financial way? And if they can, they do. But it's pretty minimum, and it doesn't amount to a lot of money each year. But every, you know, we're the penny people, so every penny helps, you know. We have to raise over $1 million privately every year, year in, year out.
So your organization is going through a transition, both in terms of facilities and in branding, getting a new name. Can you tell me some about that? Let's start with the facility here. Yeah. How long are you going to be here?
We need to leave by May of 2022. And the school district, they've been great to us. I'm sure they would give us some flexibility there. But, you know, the fact of the matter is this facility hasn't worked for this program for a long time because the building's small, the parking's bad. You know, those things, you know, are killers. Whereas the new facility is going to be 3 acres and have good parking and good facilities that are planned by our professional staff. When we moved in here in 1982, we just kind of had to retrofit a little elementary school. And it's, you know, worked pretty well over the years. But the big push for the last 10 years, and it's seriously been 10 years, was that we wanted to get into the university district. We do a lot of work with students in higher ed, and it'll be a lot more convenient if we're close to those entities that are training nurses, both at GU and WSU, the physical and occupational therapists at EWU, and the joint speech therapy program with EWU and WSU. And one of our goals is to double the population we serve. Those kids are out there and they're ready to be served. But we're going to need to hire a great number of those students that do their internships here. Just this last year, we've hired two, and we're going to hire another one soon. So it's a good training employment opportunity for the universities. We're very interested in evidence-based research, and we've been involved in quite a bit of it over the years. But our feeling is that if we get down there, the opportunity to have more research done will be substantial. So it's kind of a dream come true, but it was hard to find the property. And fortunately, we had a relationship with the Sisters of St. Francis of Philadelphia, who, along with Sisters of Providence and the Dominican and Holy Names, all came out to this country in 1890. And the Sisters of St. Francis had an orphanage there from 1890 to around 1985. And then it became a family center. But the long and the short of it is they decided to cease operations, and they agreed to sell it to us. So thank God. But I worked on that for almost 10 years. And had we not had the relationship with the sisters, we wouldn't have had the property.
So tell me what you've got planned for the area that you're buying. Are you doing one building? Are you doing five buildings? What are you going to do?
Yeah. Currently, there's an administrative building and four cottages, which used to be part of the orphanage. So we'll save one of the cottages called the Berry House, and we'll move our administrative and development staff in that one. Then we'll take down the administration and the other cottages.
So how many children do you serve now?
About 300 a year, and we would hope to serve 600 a year. Okay. And the need is substantial, because of the kids that are currently eligible in the county, we only see about 20% of them. So the majority of the kids don't even get to come here. And that's just because of limitations we have on our resources, both money and personnel.
So who refers children to you?
It's a combination of a lot of things. We do have a lead agency, the Spokane Regional Health District. So many of the medical practitioners refer the kids there, and then they refer out. But there are a lot of pediatricians' offices that know us, and they just come direct. It's amazing. It's always amazed me the number of referrals we get from parents whose relatives or friends have encouraged them to call. We're catching more kids earlier than when I first came to work here.
So you're also changing the name of the organization. Why?
Over the years, I think that the name was a little misleading. Spokane Guild School, well, we're really not a school because we serve infants. So that was kind of a misnomer. And then neuromuscular is like, nowadays they tend to use the term neurodevelopmental. Neuromuscular is a term used, but it's a pretty scary term, particularly for families. So, you know, a lot of people helped us evaluate the possibilities, and we came up with Joya Child and Family Development, because we do more than just the children. That's the one thing the families have taught us, is that the input has been as substantial in the familial side of the picture as with the child. And the word joy was used a lot in the interviews with the community and staff members. You know, it represents, I think in French and Spanish and possibly Latin too, the term really means jewel or gem or treasure. Those are all nice things. That's how we think of the children. And I think that's how the families think of us.
Dick Boyson is the executive director of Joya Child and Family Development, formerly the Spokane Guild School and Neuromuscular Center. The school will hold its annual penny drive on April 27th for people who would like to donate. To find and subscribe to the Inland Journal podcast, search for Inland Journal in iTunes, NPR One, or Google Play, or find it on the Inland Journal page at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Glad you could join us. See you next time. I'm Doug Nadvornik.